Offensively, we didn't start with the level of fluidity that I would like. We got to get that solved and get it solved quickly. I think particularly at the early stages of the season, as you pursue and attain victory, you better continually work on the things that could be troublesome for you as you continue through the journey. And lack of fluidity in our starts, three and outs and things of that nature just doesn't tee us up to play the type of ball that we desire to play.
Did you get all that? Did you write that all down? Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin yesterday as he faced the media horde. One of those, our own Odyssey sports director, Jeff Hathoon, who joins us on our video vMix. You can see Jeff on the radio at kdkradio.com. Jeff, good morning.
Morning, Larry. Yes, I was a part of that horde. Yes.
We need fluidity, apparently, but...
Well, you know, there are many days when I start my day, I need fluidity, and it's not there the way it should be. So it's kind of interesting how he's just playing it. I'm not going to oversell Justin. I'm going to leave the door a little bit ajar for Russell. Not going to give too much compliments. I'm going to give enough, but I'm not going to give too much. It's just Mike's pretty good at that stuff.
Yeah, and I know he talked for a full half hour yesterday. When your football team in the NFL is 3-0 to start the season, two road games, and then you're going back on the road, that's really impressive and one of only five teams already that don't have a blemish.
Well, what's impressive to me, Larry, is they're 3-0 without their starting quarterback. I mean, Russell Wilson might be the starter the rest of the year. I don't think that right now, but technically they're doing it with their backup quarterback, and you said a couple of games on the road. And maybe Atlanta and Denver, based on other results that they've had, aren't that bad. So it's not like they beat two of the worst teams in the league. Now, who knows how this turns out? That's why at the beginning of the year, with a few exceptions of teams you know are going to be really good, some of these schedule predictions about having the toughest schedule in the year, rarely does the team that have the toughest schedule in the year to start have the toughest schedule as it ends up. Because teams deal with things throughout a season, and teams you think are going to be good aren't. And, I mean, look at Cincinnati. They're 0-3.
What a surprise that is. And the fact that the Ravens have underperformed, and Cleveland keeps finding ways. Well, of course, they got to win, but, man, they don't look like a complete team that's going to be able to really compete either. So, right now, I know it's early, but the division is really up for grabs, and there weren't too many experts that gave the Steelers even a hint of a chance.
No, a lot of them had them in last place. And again, it's three games in. A lot of stuff's going to happen. But, I mean, you've had three games, you won three games, and there's things to work on. And for us in the talk business, there's stuff to talk about. So it hasn't been a flawless three games. Listen, there are areas across, and they're dealing with some injuries. But what this team has figured out how to do early on is stay resilient and find ways to win. And at the end of the day, that's the only stat that matters.
They're on the road Sunday in Indianapolis. That team's playing well. And then back home for a Sunday night game against the Dallas Cowboys, and they've had their issues. So, as Mike Lang would say, the turkey's on the table for this Steelers team.
Now, this is a little different situation with Indy. Not only are you going back on the road, it's the first time you're facing a mobile quarterback. So that'll be a new challenge for this defense to see how they handle it. It's good to hear from Mike Tomlin yesterday that Najee Harris is going to be good, because Indy has the worst rushing defense in the AFC, at least through three games. So you want to be able to run the ball. You don't know about Jaylen Warren yet. But yeah, I mean, if you can slow down what Anthony Richardson can do with his legs, and one of the best tailbacks, again, they're facing, and Jonathan Taylor. I feel good about that. And then Dallas, man, Dallas, you just don't know. They've got all this talent, and they just can't seem to put it together week in, week out.
Let's talk about the Pirates for just a moment, because social media blew up last night when it was revealed that Rowdy Tellez, who overall has underperformed given the entire season, slow start, he got hot, but he's four at-bats away from an incentive of $200,000 in his contract, and he got sent down, or whatever you call it, and
right.
Fans are going nuts over this.
Well, immediately they point to the Pirates being cheap and saving money. listen, the optics are not good. I'll tell you what Ben Cherington told us, that that had nothing to do with the decision, that it was more about bringing two guys up from the minors, and they released him and Michael A. Taylor so they could get a look at these two guys. It's hard to argue with the fact that why not keep the guy one more game, allow him four at bats, and he collects, you know, he passes go and collects his $200,000. Now, that being said, Rowdy Tellez was batting like 115 in September. So it's not like they released a productive player. They released a player that was horrid the first 2 months and was really bad the last month of the season. So the bigger problem with Rowdy Tellez is that they signed him in the first place. That was the bigger mistake. They should have gotten a better first baseman.
Jeff Hathorn, you got time to stick around for a little more conversation.
Absolutely.
Well, I want to talk about college football. How about those Panthers and the Nittany Lions undefeated too? And how about Pitt Sports with the women's volleyball team, number one in the nation, coming up on the Big K Morning Show? With Odyssey Sports Director Jeff Hathorn. And just to put a footnote on our conversation about Rowdy Tellez of the Pittsburgh Pirates, manager Derek Shelton said this.
Well, I think we wanted to get Peggy and Palacios. You know, the way the minor league season ends, where you only have 6 days left, is a little bit challenging. And now the fact that we can only go to 28, I mean, this isn't like 4 or 5 years ago where everybody on your 40-man roster could be here. And unfortunately, in a situation like this, we wanted to get a couple younger players that, you know, we think are going to be part of our future up here, and it came at the expense of two veteran professional guys.
So a couple more games with the Brewers, and then finish the season, Jeff, in New York against the Yankees, and then it's over for the year. So as we get ready.
Yeah, one more start for Paul Skenes. Friday they face Gerrit Cole. What a cool opportunity for all these young guys to go to Yankee Stadium the last weekend of the season. That'll be kind of awesome for them. A way to finish and hopefully find some inspiration for next year.
And the Penguins are back on ice, kind of crept up on a lot of people with the preseason game against Buffalo. The scores in those, like most preseason games, don't really matter because the superstars don't play. If they do, not for long, right?
Yeah, well, how this works, they'll play in probably one game out of six, because, you know, here's what's different about hockey is you just kind of set your lineup. So you can't roll guys in for half the game or you know, bring guys in the third period. So they'll go for, you know, a game probably at the end of training camp, the end of the preseason games. But yeah, it's crazy because they start their camp and within days they're playing games. Whereas in football, you start the camp, it's a couple of weeks, then they work a game in. But man, NHL, it's like you better come ready because you got a couple practices and you're going right in games.
There was a moment at the Steelers game right before kickoff where you go down to the field and you had a couple of celebrities there run out of the tunnel with their terrible towels, and three-time Stanley Cup champions Chris Letang wearing a Jack Lambert 58 jersey. And Evgeny Malkin, who's number 71, was wearing a 43 for Troy Polamalu. He said he was his favorite player. That was a moment. Malkin said he was nervous about coming out in Akershire there.
It looked like he was having a lot of fun and really enjoying the moment and seeing. And these guys, I believe, have been to games before. Not a lot, but they've been to games. But this is the first time they've done this. So, that's pretty cool. To see them kind of get to be a fan.
Yeah.
Because it's always cool on the other side where the fans are cheering stuff they do.
Yeah, you know, it was a cool idea for, you know, the Steelers to do that too as the Penguins get ready for their season. Who knows what to expect from this team this year, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of variables. I mean, you've got still got the big three, still got Erik Karlsson, Tristan Jarry is still the goalie. You're kind of waiting, can this team take the next step? Here's the issue, and I think it's a similar one with the Steelers. I think the Penguins are still a good team, but there's so many other good teams around them. That's more the issue than their performance, is that everyone else has gotten so much better. It is a tough road in the Eastern Conference, And, you know, they've had stretches over the last couple of years, but not been consistent enough.
If your day sounds like,
we need the report ASAP,
you deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
And they need to find something, some kind of consistency. And the scary thing with the Penguins is the last 2 years they've had Crosby and Malkin healthy for all the games. So something has to change. Some of these new moves, some of the youth has to step up. They need more production from third and fourth lines. And they need their defense to be a little bit tighter than what it's been.
All right, Jeff Hathorn, what about college football? Let's start with the Panthers, because I don't think anybody saw this team being 4-0. They have a bye this weekend and go on to ACC play in North Carolina. They got into a wild shootout. They lost 70-50 last week. So there's opportunity there. But the key has been their redshirt freshman quarterback transfer from Alabama, Eli Holstein. For the fourth week in a row, he is the ACC Rookie of the Week. I'm not sure I've ever heard of that.
Yeah, he's been, what an amazing start for him. And you come into the season, you don't know who your quarterback is. They make a decision and go with Eli, and then Eli has just taken the ball and owned it. They really like him. He's a guy who owns up to his own mistakes. He's really bonded with this team. And it's a weird schedule. They've got the noon game at North Carolina next week. So because of a noon game, you got to keep the little hat at the hotel room. And then they only have two other games the entire month. They've got that, you know, big ACC matchup with Cal and then Syracuse for the night game.
Yeah, for those that don't know, when they expanded the ACC conference, they included California. So that'll be new. And they have some fun opportunities on the road, too, down at SMU later as we get into the end part. It's hard to believe, Jeff, we're a third of the way through the regular season for college football.
And Larry, quickly, it's the same thing for Penn State. I mean, they get ranked Illinois at home, then they get UCLA at home, and then they go on the road to USC and to Wisconsin. So October is kind of that prove-it month for Penn State as well.
All right, Jeff, always appreciate your input. Thank you, partner.
Thanks, Larry.
That's our Odyssey sports director, Jeff Hathorn, the hardest working man in sports. This is the Big K Morning Show. Boy, it's kind of dreary out. Not kind of dreary, it is dreary out. This heavy rain does gum up the works. Looks like it's going to be raining here for the rest of the morning rush anyway. Thanks for choosing us. And every other Wednesday, we check in with the president and CEO of the Urban League of Greater Pittsburgh, Carlos T. Carter. Carlos, good morning.
Good morning on this bring your own sunshine kind of day. I say on days like this, you got to bring your own sunshine. So we got to bring our own sunshine today.
I'm with you. So are you going to bring us some sunshine today?
Absolutely. Hope you'll feel it through our talk today.
Yeah. You want to talk about the late Teenie Harris, who a lot of people knew who he was and know his name. Why is it so important for people to know the history of Teenie Harris?
Well, you know, Teenie Harris, they often call him One-Shot Harris because, like, I think film was expensive and he just took one shot, but really had a unique ability to connect with his subjects, was very talented but very humble. But he really, I think, humanized black people. You know, even now you see black people, Haitians, and other referred to in ways that are less human. And so he showed the triumphs, the joy, the pride. You know, he did funerals, political events, but really showed black life and, I think, humanized us in a very powerful way. And he actually captured my in-laws in his one book, One Shot Harris. And so they're actually part of that history among the other 80,000 photos. But, again, his ability to connect, I think, was one of the largest collections of urban black life. He had over 80,000 images. And it's actually archived at the Carnegie Museum of Art. But I think this is ability, again, to capture unique moments of humanizing everyday black people and showing the span of our humanity.
What would be the best way to see the works of Charles Teenie Harris?
Well, I know this actually as I mentioned, his works are housed at the Carnegie Museum, so you could go there. They're actually Carnegie Museum of Art. They're also online. And actually, this week on September 27th at 1:30 on Mulford Street in Homewood, again, September 27th at 1:30 at Mulford Street in Homewood, they're actually going to put a marker to recognize him, sponsored by the Pittsburgh Preservation, by Preservation Pittsburgh. But yeah, just say know about him. Look at his works, are pretty captivating, and you can feel like you're there and really connect with the people. But yeah, he's definitely one to remember and a great Pittsburgher.
Have you had a lot of inquiries about how to register to vote for people who may not have voted in the past? Are you finding more interest or less interest this year?
Well, I wouldn't say that. I'd say people are starting to get excited, right? And so the Urban League is very involved working with the National Urban League. So we actually have canvassers that are going out there making sure people have a plan to vote. We have a lot of activities going on just to, you know, engage people, ask any questions. But I think there is a greater, I think, incentive. People are starting to get energized, I think, around voting. I think people are starting to realize, you know, how important it is, because I know there were periods of apathy, especially with a lot of younger folks getting them to vote. But I think that's starting to change. But we'll see soon. But it's important, obviously, that people are informed, engaged in the process.
Yeah, and it is obviously, no matter who you're voting for, you got to count your vote. ulpgh.org is always a great resource. The Urban League of Greater Pittsburgh, President and CEO, Carlos T. Carter. Carlos, so Teenie Harris, everybody check out Teenie Harris's work, and we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Thank you. All right, bye.
Coming up right after the news with Paul Rasmussen at the top of this hour, we're going to talk to the co-host of I'm Listening. This is a corporate-wide two-hour presentation tonight at 7 o'clock from Odyssey, about mental health and awareness. It's the eighth time that we've been doing this, and it's been very important and successful in reaching a lot of people, and I want you to know about it because it could help you or somebody you know. I would imagine, Paul, we're going to get a lot of dissecting of this interim Senate report about the Secret Service issues July 13th in Butler.
Yeah, it enumerates in 94 pages some pretty surprising things. To summarize a couple of the first ones, Larry, there were Secret Service apparently chronic problems with their radios. And in fact, because of the failing radios that they had, the special agent in charge gave away his radio to another agent and went without one for the rest of the day. Can you imagine this? The lead agent in charge not having his own Secret Service radio.
And at the same time, you know, we heard a lot about where were the drones for surveillance. Mm-hmm. Well, the Secret Service's drone units had, quote, technical problems, so much so that at 4:43, the Secret Service employee operating the drone system had to call a toll-free helpline for support. The report notes the agent had only 3 months' experience working with that equipment and lacked knowledge about it.
That's quite honestly laughable that someone with that little experience would be given that kind of responsibility for such an important event. There are personnel who were notified about a suspicious person 27 minutes before the shooting, but the lead service agent and other site officials told the panel they didn't receive that information.
And another alert about an individual on the roof of a building was sent by radio from a local law enforcement officer to the Secret Service 2 minutes before the shooting. This was followed by another alert that the individual was armed, but the message was, quote, not relayed to key Secret Service personnel.
And here's the capper. A counter sniper interviewed by the Senate panel described seeing local law enforcement running toward the building where Crooks was positioned. They had their guns drawn, but he did not alert Trump's protective detail because it did not cross his mind to notify someone to get Trump off the stage. Now we know why they didn't pull him off.
And according to this report, counter sniper teams were dispatched to Butler following credible intelligence of a threat. However, nearly all the Secret Service personnel that spoke to the committee said they were unaware of a potential threat.
So at the end of all of this, the guy who's running this committee, Connecticut Senator Richard Blumenthal, had an interesting quote on this. He says it was almost like an Abbott and Costello farce with who's on first finger pointing by all of the different actors. It was really truth being stranger than fiction.
And the committee issued several recommendations, including enhancing planning and coordination, underlying communication, and expanding intelligence assets and resources. It also suggested designated a single individual to approve the agency's security plan. So it really all falls on the Secret Service.
It sure does. And the two sentences just jump out at me. It did not cross his mind to notify someone to get Trump off the stage, and an Abbott and Costello farce. Wow.
Yeah, and this is just the interim report. There'll be, I'm sure, more details to come.
Right, the House Task Force report will be coming out.
It's 94 pages. Again, to reiterate what Paul said, this will be much discussed today.